As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Green light, 3-0, and she's gone!
Welcome to the 3-0 Show, part of the Athletic Baseball Show. It is Thursday, September 15th. Derek Van Riper, Eno Saris, Katie Wu back with us again this week. On this episode, we're going to discuss which of the current NL wildcard teams you would most hope to avoid if you are a division winner as we think about the upcoming playoffs. We'll do the same thing on the AL side as well. We'll take a look at teams under 500 and we'll talk about the ones we would like to buy stock in for next season to be playoff teams. We'll take a look at how this expanded playoff field is working out so far. Do we like these changes or do we want to go back to the way it was, as we'd love to romanticize that as people of baseball? And of course, one other topic to get to as well, with all the rule changes happening, we'll try to get to some possible feedback that Katie and Eno have heard from people around the game so far. So we begin on the NL side, where the three wildcard teams at this moment, as we record this, will be the loser of the NL East, one of the Braves or Mets, the Phillies, and the Padres. Brewers currently two games back entering Wednesday. Big game against the Cardinals that'll happen before anyone gets to hear this podcast. Of these three most likely wildcard teams, Katie, who do you think you most want to avoid if you are one of the division winners in the NL?
Well, DBR, I think the obvious answer is whoever loses the NL East, right? I mean, you're looking at two powerhouses in the Mets and the Braves. And you know what? All season long, I was convinced that this New York Mets team was not the Mets teams that we have seen throughout the last decade or so, where they just have an ability to kind of Mets it up at the end.
LOL Mets.
Now I'm not so sure. And that's a little bit of, that's mainly a credit to just how good the Braves are. They've been so consistently good that it's almost like they never lose. I can't remember the last time I checked a box score and it was like, oh, the Braves have lost. But when you're looking at those two, I mean, it just makes sense. Let's say the Mets do end up losing the division. Do you really want to see in a best of three wild card series, Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer? Probably not. Same thing if the Braves lose. You look at their lineup, you look at what Spencer Strider has done, you look at Max Fried. I mean, that's the easy answer. I also think, you know, if we're going to go maybe off the grid a little bit, you look at the Padres. I know they have struggled a ton with consistency, both offensively and defensively. But when you look at that rotation of Yu Darvish, Joe Musgrove, Blake Snell, Mike Clevenger, Sean Manaea, those are guys that have struggled to maybe put together their best outings consistently. I know Joe Musgrove has been really good for San Diego this year, but those all five guys are guys that can go out there and dominate on any given night. And that's all you need in a wild card series. So those are the teams I'm a little worried about if I'm a division winner, about seeing in a best of three series.
Yeah. I think one of the things that it comes down to when you get into a short playoff series is that some of your depth matters less. And so, you know, I think in a playoff series, the Padres may not throw Sean Manaea, or if they do, it's almost more as kind of a lefty reliever for an inning or two. And I think that benefits them. So, you know, they also, you know, have some good relievers in the back end. You know, will be able to benefit from not pitching all of their relievers. So I think that I think the Padres have that ability. The Phillies also, especially in the bullpen, I think would benefit from slimming down. and they just got Sir Anthony Dominguez back, who I think is pretty important for them on the back end. Also, I just wonder, defense is one of those things where, I do think it matters, and I think it matters a lot over the course of 162. And I think, like a team like the Cardinals shows us every year what, like, just being able to, pick it at every position can do for you. I wonder, in a postseason series, it's one of those things where if something goes wrong, we're all going to write about it. If Kyle Schwarber runs into their center fielder and the ball drops and, it'll be super obvious and we'll all see it and we'll be like, well, that's why the Phillies lost, But we could also just have a series where there's some atom balls, maybe there's one or two poorly played balls and they just mash their way through it. So I think in a shorter series, just there's fewer opportunities for the defense to matter. And so therefore, I think their flaw matters a little bit less. But yes, obviously it's the Mets or Braves. And if I had to pick between the Phillies and Padres, I think I'd rather not place the Phillies with that offense.
I think I also like to avoid the Phillies. I think they're the team that currently among NL playoff teams, people are not thinking about as much of a threat as they probably should. The bullpen's not as bad as it's been in past years. The group of relievers they have by WAR ranks 7th in the majors this season. So it could be worse. It could be a lot worse for that Philadelphia bullpen.
It could be the other years in Philadelphia.
They have the starting pitching to be really good and to rely on fewer relievers. So I think that's what makes them pretty dangerous. Yeah, they do have those defensive flaws. That's been a problem with this team from day one. At least they did make the trade to add Brandon Marsh to the equation. So they have a real center fielder now. The Eno scenario of Kyle Schwarber turning Brandon Marsh into dust in an outfield collision during the playoffs would be a bit of a nightmare for their center field defense, but they can out-hit a lot of teams in the playoff field, and they can hit premium pitching. I think having a healthy Bryce Harper back is big. Maybe Nick Castellanos comes back and starts to look more like the guy they thought they were getting when they brought him in. So I do think Philly is a low-key, really dangerous team in this field with so much attention being paid to the winner of the NL East, especially. The Brewers sitting at a 25.3% chance of making the playoffs, but the next time we record an episode of the 3-0 show, I expect that number to be much lower. I'm losing faith over here. I'm rattled, even though they won a bullpen game on Tuesday against the Cardinals, which is pretty much a miracle given the state of their pitching staff right now. But let's shift the focus over to the AL side, though. I think this is a greater debate. Mariners, Blue Jays, Rays all up 5 games on the Orioles entering play on Wednesday. They're up 6.5 on the White Sox, 8.5 on the Twins. Eno, we'll throw this one to you first. Which of those teams do you most want to avoid if you're one of the division winners this year?
It's the Blue Jays for two reasons. And one I sort of hinted at in my NL answer, which is just I think they benefit the most from slimming down. If you look at their depth charts for starting pitching, you've got a really solid Gausman, Manoa, Berrios, Stripling, foursome. And then I think Mitch White, Yusei Kikuchi, who's already been thrown to the bullpen, your 4-5 situation there is not great. And just having Stripling as an emergency Band-Aid for if you get the bad Jose Berrios, I think that combination already gives you 3 solid starters for your postseason rotation. And then they are the team that scores the most. And from the research I've looked at, people like to say pitching and defense and this and that and aces and this and that. The one thing I could find was that hitting was still super important in the playoffs. And, we talked about this in the past with the Brewers, where like the Brewers made the playoffs last year and they were one of the worst offenses to make the playoffs. And we kept wanting to pick them because their pitching was so good. But we couldn't find, we found like one comp that was like a poor hitting team that made the World Series, and I forget who it was.
It was a 90s Braves team that had elite pitching but kind of a league average offense, and me putting on the blue and gold glasses, I looked at it, I was like, okay, yeah, I could kind of see that. They could be those great 90s Braves teams that broke my heart year over year as a kid, except for that one World Series they did manage to pull out. Anyway, proceed.
Yeah. So, the Blue Jays don't strike out. They hit for power. They've got a really deep lineup. So I'm taking the Blue Jays.
How about you, Katie?
I want to say Toronto for all the reasons Eno said. I mean, you think of Berrios, you think of Manoah, you look at that lineup. They got Vladdy Jr., they got George Springer, Matt Chapman. Kirk has had a great year. They, for all the reasons Eno mentioned, I want to say Toronto, but I am going to say Seattle. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because it's pretty similar. I mean, I think you can build compelling arguments based off the same premises as you would for the Blue Jays, as you would for the Mariners. If you look in a 3-game wildcard series, and you're starting Robbie Ray, Luis Castillo, 1 or 2, and you have Logan Gilbert in a potential game 3, you're feeling pretty good about that. The Mariners aren't exactly a team that hits for a lot of average. They're 229, I believe, and I think that's 26th in baseball. So no, they're not hitting for average, but they can thump. They have just as much power as the Jays do. They've hit 169 home runs this year, 10th best. They're tied for 10th with the Angels. The Angels, of course, have Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, so take that as you will. The next team above them is the Blue Jays. And when you got guys like Eugenio Suarez, such a great acquisition for them, and a guy by the name of, I don't know, Julio Rodriguez, a superstar in the making, I'm interested to see how Seattle responds to a playoff berth that they so desperately have coveted for so long. And I'm also going to go off things that you won't be able to find on like Baseball Reference or Baseball Savant in terms of measuring this, but momentum. This Mariners team, I know we just talked about how I felt like the Braves never lost, but I'm going to point out to a very glaring Braves loss over the weekend. That environment with the Braves in Seattle and Seattle hitting 2 home runs off Kenley Jansen, walk it off, that was an electric playoff atmosphere. And one thing about that team is they look like Seattle, so convicted if they just get in and what they can do. Now, the Mariners have been discounted time after time again. They play in a division that's not as competitive as the AL East. So when you're looking at the Rays and the Jays, you think, okay, that record's probably better because they're playing so many division or so many teams in the division, like the Yankees. They're beating up on each other, so that record's a little bit maybe not as good as it could be. Whereas the Mariners play in a lot weaker division. I still think that's the team you don't want to see, because if they get hot, they have been waiting, their fan base has been waiting so long to be in this spot. I'm really encouraged and I'm a little bit excited, dare I say, to see what they could do.
I think this is a really tough call. I think Seattle feels a lot like Toronto did when Toronto just entered this window. Like a year ago, they were one step short. This year, they look like they're going to get in, and they look like they're capable of doing damage. I wonder how they're going to handle the added pressure that comes from a long drought that they've gone through in Seattle. But this is a great team. They do a lot of things well. They were active at the deadline. They got better at the deadline. I think their rotation shortens up fine for a playoff series. They can hold their own against a lot of the other teams they're going to match up with throughout the entire postseason. So really tough call for me. I think the case for the Rays continues to be the pitching. Brandon Lau can't get healthy. I think that's a really big loss for them. We've talked about some of the injuries they've dealt with earlier this season. Losing Mike Zunino hurt, missing Wander for a good chunk of the regular season. That was obviously a problem. Losing Kevin Kiermaier, that's a guy that's always there, plays great defense in center field, it doesn't hit. But the Lau injury, he's been their best offensive player for the better part of the last 3 years. So to take him potentially out of the equation completely puts a lot of strain on a team that I think has had an offense that's built a lot like the one Eno described for the Brewers. They have a little too much swing and miss, and come playoff time, you can run ice cold when you go up against top-level pitching. So that's kind of my area of concern for the Rays, kind of why I think they're just a notch below the other two teams that we're going back and forth with here. I think the difference for me might be the Mariners' pen. The Mariners' pen is just pure filth. They haven't done it by results just yet for the whole season, but if you watch their games, everybody they throw at you is throwing 95 plus with filthy movement.
Hundreds, lots of hundreds.
It's gross. I mean, it goes down to as far as Eric Swanson and Penn Murphy, but Andres Munoz and Paul Sewald and Matt Brash.
So, and it's like the old Rays thing with the clock face. Like they all have different angles. It's all weird stuff coming at you. Yeah, I put the Rays and Mariners in the same sort of category, which is really good at run prevention. What about the lineup? So here's my question for y'all. Which lineup, the Rays or the Mariners, has more easy outs or sort of, let's say, spots in the lineup that are a problem. I don't know how you want to put it, you know, but you understand what I'm saying. Like how many, if they have a 9-person lineup, how many guys are you afraid of? How many guys are you looking forward to facing? I would say with the Rays, like any given lineup that they put out there, there's at least 3 bats in any given night that I don't think the pitcher is worried about too much.
Randy or Rosarena.
Those are the ones they're worried about. Yeah, you're worried about a Rosarena, Wander.
Wander, and who's the third one right now?
No, those were my two. I was like, okay, well, I can think of 2.
Well, then I think of, I was thinking of 3 that I wouldn't worry about that are just like pretty bad, which I think you're talking about whoever's playing at second is just really Aranda's, like maybe he catches fire, but he's really untested. You've got Jose Siri in center. I think like Mejia or whoever's playing catcher. So that's 3 real holes. You've got 3 strengths and you got 3 sort of league average guys. That's how I would put it.
Well, I think that's a good point because when you're looking at both, you know, I think that Seattle's lineup is built with a little bit more depth than Tampa's. But when you're looking in terms of these lineups as a pitcher and holes that you have, you can not be afraid to go after guys like Wander, like Randy Rosarena, like Julio Rodriguez, if you know that there's not a lot of bats that you have to be worried about after. It's not like it's a lineup like the Dodgers where 1-9, yeah, there is power, there
that's
is some, or
yeah,
with the Cardinals, right? Yeah. If you have a lineup where there's only 2 or 3 guys that you're worried about, you can pitch around them because you feel more comfortable in the fact that, okay, well, there's 5 to 6 bats that probably aren't going to do a lot of damage here, so I can be aggressive or I can be smart.
Yeah, or even, yeah, and you can even go at them. Like last night, they had 2 solo homers, you know, and they lost. Okay. They scored 2 runs and lost. So, you know, exactly. Like, so if you just don't think that there's other guys on base, then just go aggressive at the whole team, stay in the zone and give up a homer or two, and that's it. And strike out the rest of the guys. The Mariners, I think it's similar. I think the guys I'm afraid of are Rodriguez, Haniger, France when he's going well.
I put Suarez there.
Okay, yeah. I mean, he can definitely take you deep. And then I think the league average bin is then, so maybe it's 4 you're afraid of. The league average bin is a little bit, you know, Winker is somewhere in between the guy you're afraid of and league average. And then I think the real zeros, and Cal Raleigh has like 23 homers or something this year. So for a catcher, he's pretty good. Even Crawford is not awful. So I would say the real zeros in this lineup, however you want to assign them, is more like 2. It's more like 4 guys you're afraid of, and then, you know, 2 or 3 league average guys, and then maybe 2 holes. So I think it's just a better lineup.
The top is better. The top of the Seattle lineup, the upper level hitters, top half hitters are just better across the board. I think that's the separator for me. The thing I want when I have bottom of the order guys, like J.P. Crawford's a good example of this, I want guys like that who put the ball in play, who are at least a tough at bat, who are going to go up there and make pitchers work. Yeah, maybe they're going to, you know, only get on base with a walk or a single most of the time. You're not worried about them doing damage, but at least they're putting a little extra wear and tear on the pitchers along the way.
Frazier and Crawford, right? So you might put them as zeros or as holes in the lineup, but they have 12% strikeout rates. So, you know, they're going to put some balls in play, put some lottery tickets out there. And Cal Raleigh might be a zero for you, but he also has real power for a catcher. So I'd want the either way. I just don't want a total zero. Like Siri to me strikes out a ton, hasn't really shown the power. You know what I mean? Like that he's not doing either thing, making a bunch of contact or, you know, giving you a ton of homers.
Siri and Christian Betancourt is like that for me too, where I think it's, you know, occasional barrels, but there's too much swing and miss. He doesn't draw walks. Those guys just don't scare me at all. And I think the bottom of Seattle's lineup is just a little bit better, tougher outs. They're built more like the prototypical starter in the Cleveland lineup. We talked about how that Guardians team doesn't strike out. It's fine if you got bottom third guys that are like that, but then you got top end guys that do damage. That's a great fit. I'll go with the Mariners as my tie breaking answer. So we got 2 Mariners, 1 Blue Jays. I don't think either of them are an easy matchup, and I do think of the 3, if you break down all the things that we look at with these teams, the Jays offense stands out as elite. Everything else is very good kind of across the board with each of these 3 teams, but that Jays offense
as a unit, that's probably, you know, Jays offense,
stack them up against the Dodgers in the World Series, and you have two lineups where there's really, there's no easy out in either one of them on a typical day. And that's kind of the matchup I want, by the way. I just want a pure slugfest World Series this year. The games are going to take
Jays,
5 hours.
Blue Jays-Dodgers?
Blue Jays-Dodgers, yeah.
I think Blue Jays-Braves would be fun, too.
Oh, yeah.
Re-rack that old one.
You can give me another series, Seattle-Atlanta. That was fun this weekend. We could do that again.
That was fun. That was fun to watch. I enjoyed it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I want to throw this at you just as a general question. How do you feel about the way this playoff picture is shaping up with expanded playoffs? Was this something that you were skeptical of when we first learned about it? Like, do you think this is an improvement upon a typical playoff race that we've watched over the last 5 to 10 years?
Okay, well, I have to start with a self-admission of sorts. I don't like change. I am, by definition, the old man yells at cloud anytime there is any kind of change. For example, I knew in my heart that the Universal DH was better for the game. I could not put together a compelling counter-argument for why the Universal
DH still hated it.
Should not be there. And guess what? I love it now. I love it now. And I'm like, okay, fine. So I felt the same way about expanded playoffs. I was like, okay, I hate it. Didn't want to listen to any argument. Stop changing the game. I'm one of those people. But now when I'm seeing September shake up and all these different matchups and different teams, I think it's just all the more compelling for baseball fans. And you have teams like the Brewers who have taken a pretty significant landslide that somehow still have a chance to get in it. They make this division. The NL Central has not been competitive really all year long. And it still is because there's a chance for the Brewers to sneak in. You're looking at the American League, and we just talked about this, but there are three teams in the AL East, up until a couple weeks ago, there were potentially four, Baltimore, that could have snuck in. I like expanded playoffs so far. I like the way that the September has shaken up and the drama and the storylines. I think I'm going to have to reserve my final judgment until I see how the playoffs shake out. One thing I am not sure how I feel about, and I'm probably going to have to wait to see how it really rolls out, is I'm not sure I love a bye. If I'm a team that's super hot, I don't know if I want to sit out for X amount of days and not play. If I am the Braves and I just fired off 6 wins in 8 days to win the division, and now I need to sit and not build off that momentum, I'm not sure if the bye is beneficial or if it maybe hinders teams. And I guess that's something that we're going to have to see. And maybe it's just something that it depends on the team, right? I don't know. I'm just not crazy about the bye idea. I don't know what it is.
It's crazy. There's this is such a funny story about how research and statistics and baseball works, right? So, there is that idea, oh, buys are bad. And, then somebody will go and do the research and be like, oh, teams with buys do fine or whatever. The results wise, they're fine. And so then people say, oh, that's a myth then that like sitting makes you bad, right? But then I was just doing a piece on returning from COVID, and I this blew my mind, but they did some research and they found that there are things that go away in 3 to 5 days. Like if you're an elite athlete, there are things that your body, they call them adaptations, which is like, there are things that your body has figured out how to do that will go away if you don't exercise it in 3 to 5 days. And two of those things are really important for baseball players. One is maximum speed. So the maximum speed you can run will go away in 3 to 5 days. Now you can say, all right, well, we have the bye. We can have everybody do sprints. It's not that big a deal. Okay, all right. The other one is all the fast twitch muscles. So the stuff that gives you bat speed, you know, the stuff that gives you, you know, your ability to hit a 99 mile an hour fastball. Yes, you can practice, and yes, you can turn the machine up, but any player will tell you there is a difference between the best machines out there and actually playing in the game. So, you know, if you're talking about a 3 to 5 day absence from playing baseball, there literally are things that could go away. And maybe some teams have figured out ways to keep their players active, and maybe they do scrimmages or live BP or whatever it is that they need to kind of keep them fresh.
Split squad action,
yeah. but that's why I'm always careful when, like, you know, there's like, oh, bunting is bad, you know. Well, it's not actually true. There are situations where bunts make sense. In fact, if you're trying to bunt for a base hit, that draws the third base defender in a little bit, you know, and now you can maybe hit a hit over his head the next time. So there are these little things where the research catches up to old school wisdom a lot of times, where, you know, if it feels weird to a team to have a bye, you know, there is some research now that suggests that, yeah, you know, 3 days of no baseball is a big deal.
Yeah, that's the duration change. Having these longer wild card series, the best of three series, could make that become a problem. Whereas under the old format, where it was just the single elimination wild card game, I don't think that was as much of a concern. Something to watch. How long do you think you'd need to go before you'd actually believe it's a problem, though? Do we need to see it for more than one season, right? We can't just watch this playoffs unfold and say, ah, it didn't work.
Again, the problem with research, you know, even studying the playoffs, like you think that playoffs over the whole history of baseball are a good sample. Well, it's not really. It's like a 100-something, 20 years of playoffs, and they're all different teams, you know? So it's not... You can't just look at, and like players, you know, some, like even players who played a ton in the playoffs will have like 200 playoff played appearances. You know, is that enough to say something about a player? Like, remember how Barry Bonds was bad in the postseason and everyone said he's not clutch, and then he just destroyed the Braves 1 year? It was like homer after homer after homer. This is the year they went to the World Series. Anyway, it's sometimes difficult when you break things into years like that. And yes, I would definitely not try to look at the bye teams this year. If the Dodgers lose their first series after a bye, I don't think it tells you that much.
So I think I'm a little bit like Katie, where I have a tendency to reflexively push back on change. And then after trying something new, I usually like it. That's yes. The part of like getting a little older where I'm like, okay, wait a minute. Now, I don't think I like this, but I'm going to try it.
My wife tells two stories. She had a cell phone before me in college, and I said, who do you need to call? Now we all have cell phones. She got on Twitter before me, and I said, tweets.
You told her tweets?
Yes, and I have like maybe 1.5 million tweets. I don't know. It's something obscene number. Don't
it's a
look
lot
at
of tweets. I think for me, boba tea was my thing, where I was like, boba tea, floating balls of tea? What? I don't need that. I tried it. I was like, oh, this not really only good. Looks cool, this tastes good. I don't just look cool holding this thing or look slightly cooler than the typical dorky self that I am. This is actually a good thing. So try new things. You might actually enjoy them. I'm in on the expanded playoffs so far. Not just because it's killing my team to the playoffs.
Yeah, right. Your team is a little closer. I think that there is a big difference between the one we chose, the playoff thing we chose, and if it had one more, I know it's just one more, but I don't think I'd like it if it has one more.
I agree. And I know that, shocker, I just talked about how much I don't like change, but I think if you add one more team from each league, then it really dilutes the playing field, because when you look at, let's look at the National League, when you look at the teams playing for the number 5 and 6 seed, we talked about them. There's Philly, there's San Diego, there's Milwaukee. And like the next team is what? San Francisco. And they have not been good. They completely fell apart after the trade deadline. Do we reward that behavior by being, or that?
That level
the
of quality.
Way that the organization, you know, like, right. Do we reward that with the playoff berth? I don't love it. I think it also, it promotes this culture to front offices that maybe don't like to spend as much, that they don't have to. They don't have to put a quality product on the field. They don't have to try to put their best product or their best players or be competitive, because there's a way they can just sneak in if everybody else is bad too. So I think the current team, 12, is the perfect amount. I would not be on board for 14 and definitely not for 16.
I have a radical proposal as someone who doesn't like change. I would actually like series to be long enough where you had to go five starters deep. I actually think series should be longer in the postseason. We should shorten the regular season a little bit and add those games into postseason series.
So that makes the postseason more like the regular season where depth is actually tested?
Yes, because then the quality of the team you built has to be there at the end of the season. You know, you can't get away with what the Nationals did a couple of years ago. I'm not trying to disparage them for the way they won their title. Good for them for doing it that way. But I just think you're preserving what you did for 100 and, well, it'd probably be like 144 games maybe if you shortened it up just to add some games to each series, or 150 games for the regular season. I know that's going to make people that love the record books absolutely lose it, but I think a longer playoff series after the wild card round is something I would be all in for.
I like this idea, and I also think we'll get a chance to see this postseason with the way it's scheduled, with the lockout and everything being late. There are virtually no travel days. There are no rest days. So that's, you know, a problem for traveling media like me is what I selfishly think about. But when you're thinking about teams and specifically rotations, there are no rest days. I do not think you're going to see teams get away with the 4-man rotation or the 3.5 man rotation. I think this is the playoffs where you will have to rely on your entire pitching staff because there are no rest days to reset. You're not going to be able to have guys go, you know, on 4 days rest because they'll be pitching, right? So I think that's a really interesting way to look at it and kind of see how depth is tested with such limited travel and see how that could potentially play out if we ever get to the place where, you know, we are playing more than 3 to 5 games in the early series.
I think that, yeah, that's interesting, especially in my analysis earlier of, you know, I would think that the playoffs normally you shorten and depth is not as tested as much. But when you with the travel days, that's interesting. That makes me kind of like the Mariners a little bit more. I like your pick a little bit because
yes,
if you think about
come
it,
back, come to the
they
side.
Have five really good starters, you know. Yes, Marco Gonzalez is not the best, but if you only use Marco Gonzalez for 2 innings, he's probably better, you know. And now, and you can do more mixing and matching and making it through, especially with that bullpen. So that's interesting.
Well, they're also conditioned for excess travel too, playing in Seattle all season.
Very true. That's rough. Can you imagine if there's Seattle Yankees World Series or no, ALCS? Like, oof, that's a lot.
Yeah, I was thinking about a Seattle Atlanta World Series, right? That's like the long train bonus from Ticket to Ride right there. Seattle to Atlanta.
Long train bonus. Oh my God, that's deep cut.
10 points.
There is a huge component of home field advantages, how many time zones you had to pass to get to that game as the visiting team.
Something to think about.
Mariners. Maybe you guys made a good pick there.
So let's buy some stock in sub 500 teams to make it to the playoffs in 2023. The way I'm setting this up, you can buy up to 3 sub 500 teams. We're going to treat this like stock. So you can tell me how much of each team you want to buy. You can buy just one if you want to. You have to buy at least one. You can't buy more than 3, but you can distribute your shares accordingly. So Eno, I'll throw this to you first. Who are you investing in among sub 500 teams today to be playoff teams in 2023?
All right, so I was a little bit focused on money, and hopefully I wasn't hyper-focused on it, but I wanted to look at which teams have the most money to spend that were sub 500 and that weren't really bad, you know, going back, right? So you might guess one of my answers is the San Francisco Giants, because they
Homer.
Just won the most games in playoff in regular season history in 2021. They took a step back this year. They will have $50 million to spend. They will be losing Brandon Belt and Jock Peterson. Jock Peterson's on a $6 million salary. So if they brought him back even at a $10 million salary, they would still have $40 million to spend. They have players that can play first base. They have players that can play anywhere. So basically, they can buy whatever free agents they want to get. And I think that the way that they built this team, where like they have credible guys everywhere, I think it's a good idea, because then you go get a star and you put that and you move all the rest of the guys around that star, and they have all the interchangeable pieces. So that's something I like. There is, you know, more than money is the fact that they're not losing big stars, because I was also looking at the Boston Red Sox, and they have $50 million to spend, and they could have $70 million. However, if they have $70 million to spend, that means they have to replace J.D. Martinez, Nate Eovaldi, and Xander Bogaerts all in one offseason. That could eat up most of the money that they are gaining. So I don't know how much they'd be adding. There'd be a lot of sort of like getting Carlos Correa because we lost Xander Bogaerts sort of stuff, you know, like a lot of like spending a lot of money to tread water. So I think I'm a little bit more excited about the Giants. They also have some young guys in Kyle Harrison and Marco Luciano that are close. So, you know, spend a big and maybe those prospects come up midseason. And there's a sort of coming together, and they just get back to where they were a year ago.
It's funny that Eno talks about the Giants, because in my little notes I have Boston with a question mark because I wasn't sure, and then immediately after I have San Francisco underlined, can spend, underlined three times, and then re-sign Jock Peterson with a circle and a question mark. I like the Giants. I think that they are poised really well to spend. Obviously, you know, went all into the depth there, the $50 million they'll have. Farhan Zaidi is one of the most respected execs in baseball. He's shown a willingness to engage in those superstar conversations, but also can smartly rebuild. That Jock Peterson signing, I think we're talking about it a lot more if the Giants were more competitive in the second half, because I think he's really one of the best free agent signings for the money.
Rodon, right? And yeah, Rodon. Really good signings.
Exactly. And they're, I think, really undervalued because the Giants just haven't been that good the second half and really fallen out of playoff contention. But when you're looking at the Giants and their makeup, I know there's a lot of controversy around Gabe Kapler, but I don't think you can judge a manager of the year in 2021 who went out and managed the exact same way this year with different pieces and wasn't as successful. He's shown he can manage successfully with the extreme platoons and the splits and the moves that are so anti-traditionalist in baseball, but still be successful. He did that in 2021 when they won like 400 games in the regular season. I don't really think we can fault Kapler for doing the same method that he had shown to work with the pieces that he had that were lesser. So I like the component there with Zaidi and Kapler. I also like the NL West. Is any team going to catch the Dodgers? Probably not, but I think the Giants can battle the Padres if they go out and spend and bring in some good stars. You know, maybe if Evan Longoria wants to play another year, maybe they resign him, or they go out and they spend a little bit more money and land that superstar. I think if they do that and build it up with smaller acquisitions like Jock Peterson, they can battle the Padres for that wild card spot in the NL West easily. It's not a competitive division. D-backs are getting better. They have good pitching. They got some young talent. They're still a little bit far away. The Rockies are the Rockies. I'm buying some stock in San Francisco. I'm also looking at Texas. I know they're doing a little bit of a culture change out in Rangers land. New GM, new manager. They're playing in the AL West, not as competitive. You do have the Astros. You do have the Mariners, but you also have the Angels and you also have the A's. I think that they are very close. They went out and they had a heck of an offseason before the lockout. They've shown they're willing to spend. They show they're willing to revamp the culture. I think they were really close. And I think 2023 is the year they bridge that gap to being a playoff contender. I'm not sure if I'd buy the stock and saying book their 2023 postseason appearance, but I'd say their September is going to be a lot more exciting than their current one is. They also have a lot of fun talent coming up through their AAA system. I like Texas. And if Miami can go spend and get a couple bats to help out that pitching staff, they have every piece they could possibly need in that rotation. They got to do something about that offense. If they're willing to do that, I'll maybe do like half a share for Miami.
All right. So you're kind of like Giants. Like if you're only getting one, Giants would be first on your list. But Rangers, yes, clearly ahead of the Marlins, and then a few shares of the Marlins.
Yes.
All right. So something like, you know, I don't know, 60-30-10 or something, if we're splitting it up by percentage. You know, are you all on the Giants, you know, or do you have someone else you like?
I would go like 50 on the Giants, 30 on the Red Sox, and then I would like to reserve a few shares for the Diamondbacks. I like the Diamondbacks. I think the one thing that held me back is I like them as a team. I like that their young guys are coming up. I like how they're coalescing. I just don't think they have the money. Unless they break previous spending patterns, they're going to have $10 million to spend this offseason, and they only have to replace Zach Davies and Ian Kennedy. Unfortunately, getting a good reliever and a back-end starter will cost them that $10 million. So I just, unless they do a Padres and start, you know, spending some money, I think that they'll end up a couple pieces short.
See, I think with the recent spending, when they're competitive, they get closer to a league average sort of payroll. They'll get to that 130 range. I think we could see them actually go out and fill in some of their needs. The young pitching is just starting to arrive. We've talked about Ryan Nelson on Rates and Barrels. It's Brandon Pfaadt. It's Dre Jameson. It's a deeper group of pitching prospects than many people are familiar with. The position players get a lot more attention, and for good reason. This is going to be a nasty division next year, with the exception of the Rockies. The Rockies are still going to be the Rockies. There's no threat there. They're not going to pull an Orioles. They're still...
Will they have an R&D department at all is the most intrigue with the Rockies.
Where can I bet that? I'll take the under on an R&D department for the Rockies. Will they listen to that analyst if they hire one?
I'll take no odds on that.
Okay, so I think we've got four possible playoff caliber teams in the NL West next season because of the young core that Arizona has, a little bit of belief that they can go out and spend, getting a little bit of help in the bullpen. It's a relatively small ask. They're not necessarily going to have to go out and make a splashy move in free agency, but they could. They could kind of follow some of what Texas did. They could be that surprise team that actually goes after a big free agent this offseason. If you look at this team, we've talked about Geraldo Perdomo, young shortstop, maybe not being the everyday guy they thought he could be. It's really hard to make that call right now, but what if they sign Trey Turner? I will continue to make that rumor percolate as long as I possibly can because it serves me and I feel good about it. So I would like to buy some shares in the 2023 Diamondbacks.
Who did we put on every team last year? Trevor Story.
Trevor Story was on a bunch of teams.
Trey Turner is going to be our... Put him on this team.
At the end of last season, I think we said Andrew Heaney would be a great bounce back pitcher for like seven different teams.
The Dodgers.
Yeah. Giants, Dodgers, Cardinals. Yeah, we put Andrew Heaney everywhere. And hey, he's been pretty good this year. So that's worked out. But I want to see Trey Turner go to a team like Arizona and make them a lot better on top of all the young talent they have. But I think that young pitching will come through. Maybe they add one more starter somehow. Zach Gallen's breakout this year.
They have to replace like most of the bullpen, dude. I mean, it's not great. They've got Mantiply, and
that's about it.
You really need to like maybe take some of the starters and turn them to relievers in your own system, or just get really lucky. Like, yeah, I guess you could do what the Cubs did and sign a lot of 1 year guys, and they did okay, but that also still takes like 10, 15 million. Right.
David Robertson, Michael Givens, Chris Martin. Those guys were all free agents.
But it took them like $12 million.
Like, it's fine.
So. Cardinals did a really nice job, and I think it's part of the reason why they've been so successful this year in turning a lot of their prospects that were projected to be starters into relievers.
That's the
other thing.
Zach
Thompson, you look at Andre Pallante. Yeah. Like, it's doable, and it's honestly maybe a little bit better for those younger guys because they can adjust to not that pitching in the big leagues is easy by any means, but when you have a young guy that can go in there and find his way as a reliever, there's not as much pressure as a starting pitcher. They've seen some success doing that. So maybe a route for the D-backs. Because I do like their foundation right now. I do like their young core.
So I'm going to go 40% Giants stock because it makes sense. All the reasons you both outlined. I'm in on the Giants being a lot better next year. I'll go 30% Diamondbacks. I want to invest something in the Angels because I think Artie Moreno sells the team. I just don't know if it happens quickly enough for the bounce back to be in 2023. I liked them so much in 2022 that it's almost like doubling down in my losses. So I'm gonna save myself from myself. I'll say Rangers as well. I think they may have made a mistake letting John Daniels go when they let him go. I get it. You got to show results when ownership opens up the pocketbook like that. But that team's going to keep getting better. They have some young pitching coming through. Could still be in the market for another free agent or two, potentially. And I think the AL West is just soft. It's just a division where you can make up a lot of ground quickly.
That's a bulletin board material, dude. They're going to print that up and put that up in the clubhouse. The AL West is soft.
They're going to use me to play better? I hope so. What's the difference between the AL West and the two central divisions that everybody dumps on all the time?
The Astros.
Not much. Maybe the Astros, but that's it.
The Astros are great. They're a great team. Seattle's a good team, but
the Astros are better than any team in those two. Yes, maybe bottom heavy. You're right.
You have the cheap disaster in Oakland, and you have the very expensive disaster in Anaheim. So
very chaotic.
Those are some free wins there, you're saying?
The Rangers could be a 500 team just by showing up with the same roster again. And if they do anything to get better and bring up some young players, which they will, they're going to win more games. So I think they've got a pretty good path, actually, for 2023. Dear AL West, you remind me of the NL Central. Love, DVR.
Someone who's watched a lot of NL Central games, that is not a compliment.
It really is not.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I know the focus of the conversation throughout the week, pretty much around any sort of baseball podcast, baseball TV show, any stories, mostly focusing on rule changes for 2023. And I'm curious, since you've both had some time to go to the clubhouse, be around players, be around baseball people, have you heard any feedback from players or GMs that you found particularly insightful? I'll throw this to you first, Katie. Anything that you've heard that you didn't expect to hear about people inside the game liking or being vehemently opposed to some of the rule changes?
You know, not too much from the Cardinal side. This may come as a shocker, but they have been pretty stoic, pretty even keeled, not really overly passionate one way or another when it comes to these rule changes, at least that I have heard. I will say, though, even before these rule changes came into effect, Miles Michaelis, who I admire because he is so passionate in everything that he says. I just told him this yesterday. He's gone off significantly about defining the pitcher's clock. Miles Michaelis is a quick pitcher. Really like this quality about him. I don't want to say he's like Johnny Cueto level of quick pitch, but he works fast. He works efficiently. If you're not ready, he does not care. This happened in Atlanta a couple times. This happened with another team. The name is, I can't quite remember at this moment, but Miles would be ready to go. He'd be on the mound, about to start his delivery, and hitters would step out of the box and it would mess up his timing. And the umpires would still keep granting time. And finally, and this is very uncharacteristic of Miles, he yelled at the umpire. At the end of the game, he said, "It's a pitcher's clock. If I'm ready to pitch, you should be there. If you want to call it a hitter's clock, that's fine. Then you can step out. But if you want to put a pitcher's clock on me and tell me I have X amount of seconds to pitch, and there are hitters manipulating that clock and making me have to reevaluate what I'm doing, and I'm the one getting punished, you should call it a hitter's clock." And I thought that made sense. Look, shocker, I don't know if I love these changes. I don't know if I'm about them. I have heard great things from the minor leagues about them. I've also had my fair share of sitting through 4.5-hour games this season. My hope is that it benefits the game. I don't want to be a pessimist and say this is horrible, the game's going to suffer. I do think with the pitch clock, I think you'll see a little bit more of hitters kind of going around the same way as Miles was saying. He was so adamant and just like, this is a pitcher's clock. If I'm going to be the one penalized, hitters need to be held to the same standards. So that's something that I'm interested to see if that will be, really reinforced by the umpires.
Yeah. Only eight starting pitchers are faster than Miles Michaelis in the game, according to StatCast, in terms of time between pitches. We did talk about this a little bit on Rates and Barrels, and I got something wrong there. There is a StatCast leaderboard with tempo on it, and I thought that was basically what the timer would be checking. They now have an addition there where it says timer equivalent, and so they've changed it up so that we now know who's in danger of upsetting the timer. Number one slowest pitcher in the big leagues is Giovanni Gallegos.
I'm aware. I'm well aware, you guys.
And in fact, St. Louis has Ryan Helsley. He is also slow. The one thing that we did say that was right on Rates and Barrels is that it is mostly going to affect relievers. The slowest pitchers in baseball are relievers. They're waiting between pitches so they can throw as hard as they can again. And so I think we will see more of a velocity reduction in the bullpen than we will see overall. But I was wrong in saying that most pitchers in baseball will have a big adjustment to make. I would say mostly like 75 pitchers will have a big adjustment to make among qualified pitchers. There are 395 qualified pitchers. So we're talking more like a third, a quarter of pitchers will have a rude awakening. Everyone else will be mostly okay. But I, as far as game enjoyment, I've been taking my kids to the San Jose Giants, and they loved it. They were more engaged than they were at the major league games that I've taken them to. They, in fact, did some timer chanting on the guy that was a little bit slow. that kept them in the game. And the game was like 220, 230. That's more in, that has more in common with other sports. Honestly, like basketball is more like 230. Football is once a week. So I think they just get more leeway in terms of their games being longer. But they're 3 hours. I mean, they're less than 3 hours, and baseball is more than 3 hours. So I think just getting in line with our sports is good. I do know some people within the game that are worried about the pitch clock and what it will do for injuries. For example, Dr. Mike Sun, who wrote for The Athletic and created fatigue units, which shortens to FU. He consults for teams, and one of the parts of a fatigue unit are how long they rest between pitches. So the more rest they get between pitches, the lower your fatigue units are. So fatigue is one of the biggest factors for injury. So if not the biggest. So we might see some injury. What I do hope for long term is lower velos and pitchers who train for that. And train a little bit more for a marathon than a sprint. And hopefully that'll lower strikeout rates. And I think that's the thinking behind it for baseball, too.
Maybe it'll lower pitching injuries just a little bit, too. That'd be nice.
If they started training a little differently.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe this will actually lead to not throwing as hard as you possibly can like 90% of the time. That'd be amazing.
I don't know, man. It's like there's like this basic idea, which is would you rather have pitched in the big leagues and gotten hurt? Or never made it to the big leagues.
Those are my only two options.
Well, that's why everyone throws as hard as they can.
Yeah. I get it. I understand. It's just, I don't know. I don't hate these rules. I think the changes are long overdue. I think football shouldn't get away with the, we're only once a week, so we can take 3.5 hours. I think that's BS. Football games are too slow, too. Everything should go faster. Because I'm getting older.
I also have my kids have no attention span. It's faster for them.
Yeah. It's not, I mean, it's not even, I'm 38. I don't have that much of an attention span anymore. I don't want to sit. I don't want to watch all these commercials. The worst sequence in sports, I think right now with advertising of the sports I watch, at least is the sequence where a team scores, you go to commercial, they kick off and you go to commercial again. That second block of commercials after
what
kickoff.
Are we doing?
Oh my God. My head explodes.
Gotta go to the bathroom right after they score, dude.
Horrible. Just horrible. But
But they know that you're waiting for the replay of the score, right? So they don't do the replay of the score. Like, we'll be right back. You come back, they do the replay of the score, the kickoff.
There's got to be a better way. I don't know what it is, and when I find it, I'll be sure to share it somewhere.
I did talk to some players about the shift rules. They generally like more athleticism in the game. One thing I did see was some research from Cameron Grove at pitching_bot on Twitter. He found that there will be more importance on the range of the second baseman and the first and third baseman. The shortstop needs to have range and will need to have range. There will be no added importance to shortstop range. I think we pretty much put our best defenders at shortstop anyway. There's not a lot of Johnny Peraltos out there anymore. It's mostly like athletic, you know, guys picking it at short. But what we have been doing is the Mike Moustakas at second situation. And I think we're going to do a little bit less of that.
I like how you went after Johnny Peralta, by the way. That was uncalled for.
I love him. He's just not... I didn't think he was the shortstop for many of his years, that he was a shortstop. He continually proved me wrong.
I thought the same. I thought he was clearly not a shortstop, but played the position for several years more than I did at the big league level.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it works. We are going to go as we sign off. A few reminders. You can find Katie on Twitter at KatieJWu. You can find Eno at EnoSaris. You can find me at Derek Van Riper. If you don't have a subscription to The Athletic, you can get one for $1 a month for the first 6 months at theathletic.com/baseball show. If you've got a question for us for a future episode, you can drop it on this video in YouTube, or you can send it to our Rates and Barrels address, ratesandbarrels@theathletic.com. That will find its way to us. The Athletic Baseball Show returns on Friday.
You've always got the green light here.